Jason, the Bears-Packers rivalry is back, even if it didn't end well for the Bears on Sunday. We'll talk about that and more coming up on Halas Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, we're staring into an empty Lambeau Field on Sunday evening where the Bears have just lost 28-21 to the Packers. They did so in dramatic fashion when Caleb Williams threw an interception in the end zone on 4th-and-1 with less than a minute to play. We'll get to the big picture ramifications here soon enough, but suffice to say that the rivalry here is back, and it actually means something more than just pride, right?
I love it. I think it is the best this has been since maybe that opener in 2019 where there was all the hype coming in for the Bears and Aaron Rodgers was healthy. It was the Thursday night standalone game to kick off the season at Soldier Field. And then it didn't end up being that great of a game, and there hadn't been really that great of Bears-Packers games since, unless you count that one at the end of last season that was really not a real game. No matter how much the Bears want to claim that, Green Bay had no stakes in that. Anyway, I'm getting off track. This was fantastic. This was punch for punch to the end. This started, Pat, 11 months ago when Ben Johnson took the job and starts chirping at Matt LaFleur like everybody else does. But he had there was a little more to it when Ben Johnson did it because he had actually been facing Matt LaFleur for the last few years in Detroit. And it was a pretty frosty post-game exchange between the two of them. I don't even know if you can call that a handshake, more of like a hand slap and a walking on. And Ben Johnson wanted, if the Bears had gotten the touchdown with 22 seconds left, was at least contemplating going for two at Lambeau Field to win the game and put it away. That is excellent, excellent television. And you get the sequel, you get episode 2 in 2 weeks at Soldier Field. As of right now, they're on track to play each other in the playoffs in Green Bay, which would be just must-see TV. This rivalry is totally back. I think it's always a big deal in Chicago. I think it's become less of a big deal in Green Bay because they've dominated and they've had bigger fish to fry in the Lions. I think it's definitely been watered down nationally to where people see this and they're just kind of like, it's like watching Giants Cowboys. You're kind of like, okay, I know I'm supposed to care about this, but do I really? This is absolutely a good thing for this rivalry. And you would probably agree I'm a tough grader in general.
Mm-hmm.
This is progress for the Bears. The Bears have leveled up to Green Bay. They were not run out of the building. They have every reason to think that they can win and should win when this is in Chicago in 2 weeks. This is a big step up for the Bears. It's not a success, because they're too grown up for that, and that's another credit to Ben Johnson. I think he has raised the standard at Halas Hall to the point where this wouldn't be talked about the way it would have been by Matt Eberflus as like, oh, look at us. But the reality is it is. I mean, they have been laughed out of this building. Nobody's laughing Sunday night. There's more relief than anything on that Packers sideline when Keyshawn Nixon comes away with the game-sealing interception.
They were probably laughing at halftime, though, Jason. I mean, the Bears were brutal in the first half. They went into halftime with 71 yards. The Packers had 207. That's not good. And they went into the half having given up an inexcusable touchdown, a 45-yarder to a cornerback masquerading as a wide receiver who was at first a wide receiver masquerading as a cornerback. And Bo Melton... it's 14-3. Caleb Williams, I think, until a checkdown with 10 seconds left, had something like 22 passing yards in the half. And there was every reason to think coming out of halftime that the Bears were going to be unable to move the football. And all they did in the second half was they had 4 drives, Jason. They ended in touchdown, touchdown, field goal, and then the interception at the end that I want to get into. If Caleb Williams in the offense is the second half version of themselves, the Bears can win a lot of games even with the Roma Dunze out. If they're the first half version, boy, I mean, they can't beat the Cleveland Browns if they play like that.
And a lot of times that if that first half version in the first half is going to be enough to doom you. The Packers may not always let you back into a game like this. You know, when you play better teams like the 49ers and Rams and whoever else might lie ahead in the rest of the regular season and then potentially in the playoffs for the Bears, you don't always know that you're going to get a chance to come back from a horrible first half against really good teams. I do want to make one point, and then I want to ask you something about Caleb Williams. I contrast this Sunday night,
where they're down 14-3 at the half,
and they punch their way back into it, and it is a real game all the way down to the end, with Matt Nagy's last game here in 2021, where they're up 6 at the half, and Matt Nagy is telling NBC at halftime, "I'm having so much fun." And then the game, just as it always had, just unravels in disaster where they lose 45-30. That contrast between those two games tells you a lot, in my opinion, about where the Bears are now compared to where they have been as the same old Bears. My question for you as it relates to Caleb Williams is, what did he say about this? Because he has kind of been, to me... And part of this is not a criticism. This is his personality, and I think this is a good approach. He has been really looking for the positives in some of his rougher games lately. What was his takeaway from how he played Sunday night?
That it wasn't good enough in the first half, and that, you know, the only thing that really changed at halftime was that they kind of reminded themselves to focus on the details. And that sounds like coach speak stuff, but whatever it was did work because – boy, they were a completely different team in the second half. You look at look at the lengths of the drives, Jason. 10 for 64 in a touchdown, 7 for 37 in a field goal, and then 17 plays for 83 yards to just kind of beat the Packers into submission. You know, we have these...
You can feel the Packers laboring.
Yes.
That's like when you're out on a run and you get into your fifth or sixth mile and you're just like...
This means nothing to anybody but about 30 sports writers, and I'm sorry, but the stat packet we get at the end of every game, Jason, has a running play sheet from every play run. Yeah. The fourth quarter play sheet is one side of one page.
Yeah,
that's how few turnovers and punts there were. Of course, the one turnover was the backbreaker. And, you know, let's set it up here. Caleb Williams inherits the ball at the 26, down 7 with 3.5 minutes to play, roughly. First play goes up the left sideline to Luther Burden for 27 yards. The Bears are cooking. Two plays later, Caleb scrambles right. Devin Duvernay, who's playing because Rome Odunze is out, runs kind of an over route on a scramble drill, gets open, and gets 24 yards. All of a sudden, it's the two-minute warning, Jason, and the Bears have the ball at the 23 going in.
I think that's the second catch of the season for Duvernay, by the way.
I think that's right.
They're at the Packers 23.
Yeah, at the two-minute warning. And all of a sudden, you know, they're in business here. Ben Johnson, I think wisely so, decides that he wants to run the ball a little bit. And that's for two reasons. Number one, the run game was really getting better and better as the game went on. And secondly, they wanted to be the last team with the ball.
Let me stop you right there, because if we're going to talk about past coaches, could you even put into a sentence what Matt Eberflus's game management philosophy was?
No.
Ben Johnson's is clearly no rebuttal drives ever. He's been coaching this team for, 3 months, and we know that about him.
I do think that there are circumstances this year that are new. You know, the new kickoff rules really make a last-second drive a lot easier if there's a chance you're going to end up with the ball at the 40-yard line. But, you know, so they hand it off to Monongai on 1st and 10. He gets 6. Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
2nd and 4, hand it off to him again. He gets 3. 3rd and 1. The other interesting thing here is Matt LaFleur could have taken timeouts.
I was surprised. I don't remember how you reacted to that, because I was surprised he wasn't calling timeouts.
Yeah, so LaFleur lets the clock run. It's 3rd and 1. Monongai plunges up the middle and gets stuffed for no gain. The Bears take a timeout with 35 seconds left to talk about it. Or, I'm sorry, 27 seconds left to talk about it. Then the Packers, as the Bears come to the line of scrimmage, take their own timeout. So the play that Ben Johnson draws up, for lack of a better word, is pretty similar to the touchdown pass to Cole Kmet in Philadelphia. It is a play-action pass in which DeAndre Swift goes into the left flat, Komet releases on a corner route, lines up on the left, kind of bows out, and then goes back toward the left pylon, or back left pylon. In Philly, he was wide the heck open, and all Caleb had to do was kind of just lead him a little bit into the end zone. And what happened on Sunday was, again, he was wide the heck open. There's a screenshot, Jason, where Komet is at the 2, running his route, going into the end zone. There is not a single defender in the end zone, and the closest defender behind him is at the 6. So he's got a 4-yard head start with nobody in front of him. As Caleb Williams is rolling left.
He's under
left.
Pressure at this point, Caleb is. Scrambling.
He's rolling left. Swift is covered. DJ Moore kind of went in motion and went underneath. Kind of pops out for a second, but I don't think that was a realistic play. And Caleb feels that they've got somebody trailing him as well, so he can't keep it. So he looks up and Cole's open the way he was open last week. And he just left the throw short.
Yeah.
And he didn't lead him. And Kayshawn Nixon, who was at the 6-yard line when Cole was at the 2, had enough time to jump in front of him, grab the ball, and seal the game. For Caleb, that's got to be maddening, because this is a what you dream of in the backyard situation here. This is you're trying to beat your rival in the last minute of a game. And it's got to be maddening, too, because rolling left is what he is good at, full stop. And, I talked this week to JT Barrett, the old Ohio State
quarterback,
who's now the quarterback. Can I look up the quote? The quote's great. I want to read it to you.
I want to say one thing about that play while you're doing a little bit of research. This is part of where, to me, the confidence has shifted in the fan base and probably in the organization a little bit, from more so on the coach than on the quarterback, because I think it was a good play. I think it was a good play design. If you look at last year, you're saying, well, all my confidence is in Caleb Williams and his talent. These coaches are on their way out. Now it's like, okay, you may still be very confident in Caleb Williams, but you're more confident in Ben Johnson. I was looking at this play and trying to analyze it afterward, and we don't have the all-22, which really gives you a great view of everything right away after the game. But it looked to me like, and Ben Johnson said there were a lot of options, it looked to me like Komet was open. It looked to me like DJ Moore was, I would call that, open enough underneath. And it also looked like Loveland might have been open in the middle of the field. There were options. I would not have thrown the ball, I don't think, in that situation. Based on what had worked to that point, I probably would have run again. If I was Ben Johnson, that's what I was thinking before they snapped the ball on that play. But when a play works like that, when you need a 4th-and-1 with the game on the line, and you as the coach call a play that gets 3 different guys open, arguably, if we want to debate whether DJ Moore and Colson Loveland were open, I mean, there were choices there to make. That's a good play call in that situation. Go ahead. What did you find from JT Barrett?
Well, JT Barrett was saying, we were talking about the Komet throw against the Eagles. And Barrett goes, oh, that's not me. That's just something special that he does. And I joked. I said, you can take credit for it. And he said, no. He said that Williams has, quote, if I may, freaky stuff in his body where he can rotate that torso and flick it like it ain't nothing. And I said, does anybody do it like that? And he said, that cat in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So that is the position. When you're calling up a gotta-have-it play, having Caleb Williams roll to his left is a really good idea.
Well, that whole play is what we talk about all the time. It didn't work out in this case, but it's that pairing of Ben Johnson's expertise and Caleb Williams' talent. We have seen that talent, that specific ability that you're talking about with Caleb Williams, his entire time with the Bears. I remember the first time we saw it in live action was a preseason game against the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
And you have seen him do it over and over and over. He's got that incredible ability that puts him over the top. What he doesn't seem to have right now is just the basic play-to-play precision in both his throwing accuracy and his timing. And that is something you've got to have in this offense. I think one of those things you can teach. I think you can teach some of the precision. I don't think you can teach someone to do that special ability that he has to make off-platform throws. So you put these things together, and you got a play where you could get the touchdown, and it was on the table to go for 2 and win the game afterward.
after that touchdown. You put yourself in that position when you combine Ben Johnson's expertise with Caleb Williams' talent. It didn't work out this time.
Is it possible that this is about as good of a loss as they could take? I mean, it's only their second loss in, what, almost three calendar months. But to come so close against a rival and to have a chance in 13 days to get him at your place, I don't think anything about today felt disqualifying if we're going to consider the Bears a playoff team.
It's not,
and that's just a change from what we're used to.
Yeah, it's not. Don't plan the parade route for this at all. And we're not saying that. There's a lot of issues here that have been issues for the Bears all season, but this was competitive. This was respectable. They were going for the tie or win at the end. This is different because of all of the context. Had they done this at any point in the Matt Eberflus era, and they actually did the home game against Green Bay last season, they were right there. That is an aberration to everything else you've seen. And when they lose, it's like, oh, this is either continuing a slide that's already in progress, or this is the start of them falling off a cliff. This doesn't feel anything like this. This feels like it fits within the trajectory of their season, where the Bears are playing respectably and competitively, and nothing about what happened Sunday makes me think that they're about to just plunge. And nor does it make me think that they have any reason to be concerned facing Green Bay again in less than 2 weeks.
I was worried at halftime that it may devolve into that. It certainly felt like it was on the way to it. And then their ability to bounce back, I think, is notable. Defensively, Jason, I keep being surprised that the Bears' defense is hanging on the way it is. You know, nobody's going to throw a parade for somebody who gives up 28 points. But they didn't seem overmatched, I don't think, particularly in the second half. They did so without Kyler Gordon. And just another weird injury thing with him, he hurts his groin while warming up, but after they had set the 46-man roster, which meant that they couldn't play him, but they also couldn't call up anybody to take his place. That's alarming. And Ben Johnson said afterwards, I mean, we're a better team with him than without him, and it makes you wonder whether having him out there would have swayed this game one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, point number one is that it's been a brutal season for them and for Kyler Gordon. He's played like three games, I think, mm-hmm. right? I mean, not what you expect on either side.
And this is the third different body part,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, not what you expect on either side when you sign a three-year, $40 million contract extension to make him a cornerstone going into the season. But also, you know, for all the good that they have gotten at corner with guys like Nashawn Wright and C.J. Gardner-Johnson showing up and contributing, those guys aren't Kyler Gordon. Kyler Gordon got paid like that because he is unique in terms of being a run and pass stopper. And Ben Johnson said it perfectly, I think, after the game. They've had a lot of guys answer the call, mm-hmm. but they are better when Kyler Gordon is on the field, and that's totally true. I'm really concerned and eager to hear what kind of injury this is, because how severe this is, and we didn't have information on that as of Sunday night. But you're getting to the point, Patrick, where it's so late in the season, there's only four games left. I mean, if he has to go on IR, that's a big deal. That's a big problem. And that is not the only reason they had trouble in the secondary, but they had a lot of trouble in the secondary. And Kyler Gordon is a guy who doesn't make many mistakes and often is so good that he fixes other people's mistakes.
Yeah, and Jaquan Brisker, I think, was to blame for the 45-yarder. You also had Christian Watson catching just an easy little slant route and running 41 yards. I think he ran 21.6 miles per hour, which is pretty fast. Also, Roma Dunze, this is our first chance talking since we found out that Rome's got a foot issue. He didn't play Sunday, and we will see going forward. Ben John, I'm bringing this up for one reason and one reason only, and I think you know why, Jason. Do you remember how Ben Johnson described Roma Dunze?
He didn't call him a unicorn, did he? You can't call everyone a unicorn.
He called Dan Campbell a unicorn. Okay. No, he said that in many ways...
He called Darnell Wright a unicorn, too. What did he call Rome?
He said in many ways, Rome, Adunze, was like Caleb Williams' blankie.
Yeah, he did say that tonight. Yeah. He did say that Sunday night, yes.
Yeah, and I think that's...
I'm glad you weren't in there, right?
Yeah, I watched
that. I was in the Ben press conference. Patrick was in the Caleb press conference, and the opposite of us was in the locker room at those times. It's probably good that you weren't in there when it happened, because would you have been able to, like,
stay composed, or would you have giggled?
I may have giggled, but just I enjoy colorful descriptions in that regard. One,
he's not doing Caleb any favors by saying.
And he essentially said, hey, man, we got a lot of weapons. It's fine. We got a deep tight end room. We got a deep receiver room. We got a deep running back room. And he's right.
But he should say that, by the way. He's Ben Johnson. Yeah, he's supposed to be one of the best, if not the best, offensive play caller and schemers and game planners in the league. Yeah, he should be able to figure this out. That is the whole idea as a coach, and this is one of the things that Matt Eberflus and Matt Nagy could not do. The plan, it's just like life.
Right.
The goal in life is not to avoid hard situations. Mm-hmm. That's coming. You can't avoid that. But how do you adapt and react and solve problems on the fly? And Ben Johnson has done so much of that this season. It's been very impressive. So he should say that. Exactly what you just said. I've got running backs. I've got tight ends. I've got other receivers. I can figure it out. I think that is the expectation.
They have four games to go, Jason. They think they have to go at least 2-2 to make the playoffs. And that gets them to 11 wins. You've got the Browns coming up, and then you've got the Packers at home at the Niners. And then you end up with a home game against the Lions, who stayed alive by beating the Cowboys on Thursday night.
They are on the back of the Bears' neck right now, by the way. One game back and have already pocketed a win against the Bears.
Yeah, the Packers, meanwhile, they go to Denver next week. So that's, I mean, that's a live chance for them to lose a road game. What is there? Did anything happen on Sunday night that changes the way you look at what's in front of them?
I've thought all along that they needed to win. If winning the Cleveland game might be enough. 10 wins might get you in. It depends what Detroit does the rest of the way, and I don't have Detroit's schedule in front of me right now. But I think I agree with you that 11 definitely gets the job done, one way or another, whether that's as the division champ or the wild card. And I've thought all along finding those two wins down the stretch was going to be the Cleveland game, and then you got to win one of the Green Bay games or the San Francisco game. None of those are going to be easy. I still think probably at San Francisco is the best chance to get that other win. Even I know what you're about to say, and that it's so hard to win on the road, and I get that, and I do, and I think they have a very reasonable chance to beat Green Bay in 2 weeks. I think they proved that Sunday, whereas I don't know how I wouldn't have been super confident in that before. I kind of have seen all along that maybe they end up like the 5 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And the playoffs, man, sometimes it's not really about where you're seated. It's about how fortunate your draw might be. And if you ended up the 5 seed, it's almost certainly going to be Tampa. At Tampa in the first round. And Tampa is 7-6.
At Tampa, and then you got to go to the Rams.
Right now, today, though, by the way, on track to come to Lambeau for the wild card round.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Oh, it'd be great. it'd be must-see TV, man.
Jason, I think that'll do it from here. Anything else jump out at you? Special teams fairly flawless today, except for Cairo Santos. The kickoff with a minute 30 or so left in the first half leaves it short, so the Packers get the ball at the 40. And without that, the Packers might have just said, the heck with it, we'll run the ball twice and go to the locker room. Instead, they end up throwing deep to Melton and score. So otherwise, you know, he made his field goals. And at Lambeau Field, I think that's impressive enough.
Do you feel better or worse about the Bears' outlook the rest of this season after this game than you did before it?
Slightly. This sounds...
You can say it. It's okay. It's a safe place. It's just you and me and my mom and whoever else listens to this.
This is counterintuitive, but I feel a little better about them today than I did yesterday.
I do too. And I know that runs counter to probably like how my personality is perceived, but I just... we have walked out of this building so many times over the last few years, Pat, into the freezing cold, just freezing and bored.
Right.
Just it was like just another empty trip up to Lambeau Field to watch the Bears lose in boring fashion, like we knew they would, and watch Mitch fumble the ball over, or Justin get his, you know, get knocked around, and this was so much more entertaining, and signals so much more to come. I think in that the rivalry is finally back, because it wasn't back for me when they won that game against Malik Willis or whoever at the end of last season. This is like the head coaches are feisty with each other. The teams are like even enough that they can play down to the final seconds like this. They are both record-wise fighting for control of the NFC North. This is what you should want, whether you live in Chicago or Green Bay, no matter which team you want. This is, and I know a lot of Packer fans who have said this is what they wanted. They wanted this rivalry to be back. They wanted a Bears team that could actually fight them. And you have that now.
I think secretly they enjoyed winning most games for 30 years.
Hey, they enjoyed it, but come on. Of course they enjoyed that, but like, if you're going to tune into this twice a year, you want to see it be a real game, and you got one Sunday.
Absolutely. Jason, Lord knows whether we will get one when the Cleveland Browns are here next week, but we will help prepare everybody for it when we do a podcast on Wednesday or Thursday. Until then, you can follow Jason and I on social media. Check us out at the Sun-Times website, and if you live in town, buy a paper. For Jason, I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.